Welcome to Bookwaves on Cover to Cover. I'm Richard Walensky. My guest is Scott Heim, whose latest novel is We Disappear. Earlier novels are Mysterious Skin and In Awe, plus a collection of poetry, Saved from Drowning, short stories, essays. Scott Heim, this new book is your first novel in 10 years.
Right.
Writer's block?
That's a big part of it. I think when the first book came out, it did sort of unexpectedly well for me and for my publisher, and I was kind of riding on that kind of high in a way when I wrote the second book. I worked really, really hard on the second book, but it only really took me a couple of years to write. And then when that came out, I don't know, right before the book came out, Rupert Murdoch bought my publisher, and they sort of got rid of a lot of writers. And, you know, my book did squeak through, but they didn't really promote it that much. And it also didn't meet with as much sort of critical praise. And I think a lot of people that liked Mysterious Skin didn't warm up so much to In Awe. And I think all these things sort of combined to, I don't know, make me a little bit depressed, and I didn't really have as much faith in myself and in the world of publishing. So I started working for a textbook company freelance, and that was good work, but it kind of zapped some of my creative energy. And then, you know, over the space of a few more years, I had personal problems. My mom was getting sick and various other things. The years went by, and I would pick up the book and work on it for a while, and then I would put it down, and then one thing led to another, and 10 years passed before I finished.
Well, the book, We Disappear, did you begin it around the time after you finished In Awe? I understand that the original versions of it are very, very different from this.
Right. It originally began as a totally, wholly fictional narrative. Every time I would pick it up, I think the characters in some ways, I wasn't even realizing it. The lead character of the mother sort of was resembling my mother more and more, and in some ways the narrator character in the original version was third person and younger. I eventually made it first person, and it started resembling myself. And then when my mom was dying, I was once again in the middle of a writer's block, and I think I started kind of writing down things that were happening to me and my mom as she was dying, and I kind of started incorporating those into the fictional parts of the book. But at some point, I don't really even remember why or when or how now, but I kind of started playing with the idea of merging a memoir with a novel. And I liked doing that. I liked playing with the two genres and seeing what I could do with it.
I noticed in various interviews I've read with you, you talk about how people seem to have this idea that it's either memoir or fiction rather than some kind of melding of the two. And you say it as if, why are they doing that? But it's obvious that's what you're playing with.
It's funny. I think some people want it to be a memoir. And when they find out, for instance, this happened a lot with Mysterious Skin. People would ask me what in the book was true or which character I'd based on myself or questions like that. And I find sometimes if you tell people, oh, it's not true or this wasn't based on experience, they almost get a little disappointed, even almost a little angry. So the fun thing about writing We Disappear is I could sort of play with things that actually had happened and play with the, you know, the merging of memoir and fiction. But I don't know, maybe I learned my lesson a little bit. When people ask me now, I tend to be a little more vague because it's funny how people tend to feel cheated if you tell them that something isn't based on experience. But yet, at the same time, sometimes if you do tell people, oh, yeah, it is based on experience, they tend to discount you as though if, you know, you don't have enough imagination or something if you write totally from experience.
Well, I found this to be the case with a number of people. I interviewed a writer not long ago who had one real character, a historical character in a historical novel, and the comment was, nobody would believe it if I made it up. That's why I did that.
Right. I often say that, too. For instance, I have a friend who's a social worker in a hospital, and he always comes home with these just amazing, sometimes horrifying, sad stories. I always think, like, oh, wow, I want to use this story he's telling me in fiction. And then I think if I wrote it in a novel, people almost wouldn't believe it. Sometimes that phrase, truth is stranger than fiction, is actually very true sometimes.
Well, one of the points about writing fiction is you can't have coincidence unless you're Dickens. You can't have the kind of coincidence that really happens in real life.
That was sort of, in some ways, what was fun about this is I could take some of our real experience, myself and my mother, but I had this totally fictional backstory that was happening in the novel. So I kind of based the characters in the book on ourselves, but then, I don't know, when I went home to take care of my mom, I knew that she had had a lot of stories from her past, problems from her past. She'd had a difficult childhood. And I thought when I went home to take care of her that I would be learning a lot more about that. And as it turned out, she didn't have as long to live as I thought she did. So writing the book for me kind of was my replacement for the things that I wanted to learn about my mom that I wasn't able to. Since there was still so much mystery about my mom's past, that was sort of, in some ways, the fun, or almost like the therapy of the book, was creating this backstory of the mother character in the book that I wasn't able to in real life.
On YouTube, you created a trailer for We Disappear, and inside the trailer there are pictures of a scrapbook, and that scrapbook kind of pops up in We Disappear.
Right. That was fun. I think in this day and age, sort of any way you can get the word out about your book is a good thing. There's so many opportunities now with the internet for, you know, publicizing a book, but I think there's still sort of so many possibilities that haven't really been tapped into. So one thing I wanted to do was I wanted to do something with YouTube, but I didn't want to have those sort of cheesy trailers that people sometimes make where they're just kind of reading a scene from the book and then kind of dramatizing it. So I just kind of took images or impressions or the atmosphere of the book, and I just got a video camera and learned iMovie, which is pretty user-friendly, and then made that trailer. But yeah, the sort of an overarching image or theme in the book is missing children and scrapbooks, and the mother character in the book, you know, papers her walls with pictures of missing people, and so that was one thing that I filmed for the trailer that sort of pops up again in the YouTube video.
In an interview, you said that your partner noticed comparisons with Mysterious Skin, and I did too, particularly in terms of memory loss, trying to remember the past, and vaguely succeeding or failing, where the past and memory takes different forms at different times.
I think that's one of those things that fiction writers aren't even aware is like a theme of their work. I think there's certain things that I'm not even aware of that are recurring themes, especially in the first book and the second book. And he noticed right away when he read the new book that it had a lot of themes that the first one had. I'm certainly interested not so much in how people remember, but I guess maybe the ways memory changes, or how over a number of years you can remember an event in a totally different way. And also, sometimes if you tell a lie enough, you eventually start believing that it's true. I liked playing with the characters in this book with sort of unreliable narration. So the mother character has these stories that she tells, but the way she tells them are always different, no matter, you know, depending on who she's telling it to. And I think that's kind of an interesting parallel in this book with Mysterious Skin, how the characters have something that happened to them in the past, but they remember it very differently.
Scott Heim, the book concerns a character named Scott, who is in New York and has problems with crystal meth, who goes to Kansas on the spur of the moment to take care of his dying mother, and she wants him there because they're going to go investigate together disappeared children, kidnapped children. Along with that, it turns out she disappeared for several days, and trying to find the secret behind that is the basis for the story itself. Was your situation similar to the Scott of the book when you went to visit your mother? I mean, he's also working as a textbook writer.
Right. Yes and no. Certainly in my long period of sort of depression and writer's block, I had a period where I had a problem with drugs and depression. Of course, that didn't happen at the same time as when I went home to take care of my mother. And all the backstory in the book and all the sort of fictional stuff that happens in the mother's past were things that I just created out of my imagination. But for the purposes of the book, I always like the idea with my titles sort of using something that's literal and figurative at the same time. And I liked the idea of the word disappear, how they're sort of investigating disappeared people, but both of the lead characters are sort of disappearing as well, like she's, you know, dying and he's kind of disappearing into his depression and drug abuse. So what I did is I kind of took like this difficult period in my own personal history and applied it to the character, but at the same time that, you know, that the mother's dying. And it sort of worked to have all that stuff going on at the same time in the fictional narrative.
And there's a character named Dolores who's based on two real people, one you liked and one you disliked.
Correct.
Friend of your mother's, or the mother in the book, yeah.
You know, I guess it's a difficult thing when you are writing a novel that has similarities to reality, I always have this fear that people are going to come out of the woodwork and say, oh, is this based on me? And when you do that, it's funny. The people who maybe you don't like so much in real life tend to see a character in a positive light, like as if you're creating them in a good way. Whereas sometimes the people that you really love and are really close to might see themselves in a character, and unfortunately they always tend to see like the negative aspects that you're bringing out in their characters. Certainly with that character, I took two people who were important players during the time I was taking care of my mom, and I just kind of merged them into one. To my knowledge, neither of them have read the book, so I'd be really interested to see what they actually think of that character.
How about your sister, and is she close to the fictional sister in the book? And if so, how did she respond?
She is, and to my knowledge, she hasn't read the book yet because she's been really, really busy for the past few months, and it's still new. I only sent her, you know, like a galley copy of the book a few months ago, so... You know, she just started teaching elementary school, so I don't think she's really had a chance to read the book yet. I don't know, that might be a long family discussion that she actually does read it.
Does it bother you a little bit that in order to bring out your own imagination, you're using real people? I mean, is your partner kind of freaked out, like one of these days there he's going to be?
Actually, my partner's a novelist also, and I think, you know, there's a lot of baggage that comes with that, or a lot of kind of competition sometimes when you're in the same art form. But in a way, that's one place where it's not a problem, because I think as a fiction writer himself, he understands that you do sometimes use, you know, the people around you or the experiences around you, and you warp them to fit the theme or the characters of your book. And sometimes reality comes out, or sometimes your experience comes out better or through rose-colored glasses or something, and comes out better than it actually happened, and sometimes it's the opposite. So that's one thing, that it's good having another fiction writer close to me who understands what that process is like.
Why did you decide to use your real name and your mother's real first name?
It didn't start that way. I think when I was going through the experience of my mom's death, I found that after a long period of writer's block, I suddenly had this drive to write again. You know, so much of the time I spent in Kansas was just me and her. It was almost kind of therapeutic for me at the time to kind of write things down that were happening to us. And so I was using first-person pronoun and my own name and her name at the time, and I think I fully thought that eventually I would merge them with the fictional characters in the novel and change the names back to how they existed before. But I found that my writing was coming so feverishly, and I was actually excited to be doing work again, that I just kind of kept them, and then eventually I realized that it also fit the whole theme of disappearing in the book, because I liked the idea of Scott Heim, the actual living, breathing writer, disappearing into the Scott of the character in the book. So it just sort of, it almost added like another level of complexity to the whole theme of disappearing that I'd set up in the novel.
What was the relationship time-wise between the incidents with your mother and Mysterious Skin, the film, which obviously changed your life?
Unfortunately, my mom died about a year before the film actually came out, which was a big disappointment. I really wanted to finish this book when she was still alive, and it would have been so great for me to actually have her experience the film. About 6 months before they actually started filming the movie, Joseph Gordon-Levitt, who plays Neil in the movie, wanted to sort of see the locations where the book is set and meet the people that some of the people are, and the characters in the book are based on. So he had actually come back to Kansas with me and he met her, and, you know, that was really exciting for her. I would have loved it if she could have been alive for the movie to come out. But as it happened, it didn't. So I think in a way, writing We Disappear was kind of, you know, like I dedicated the book to her, and I think it was kind of like a posthumous gift in a way for her.
You're listening to an interview with Scott Heim, whose latest novel is We Disappear. Scott Heim, let's go back and talk a little about your career. You were born in Kansas, grew up there, wrote poetry as a kid, but did not really think about being a writer?
I guess I was one of those people who I never thought that that could be the path I would take until I had kind of a teacher or a mentor giving me praise. So it's really not until I went to college and I was lucky enough to find a teacher who was, you know, had published a few novels herself, and she recognized a certain talent in me, and she saw the things I was good at and the things I needed to improve on. And she was eventually the person who sort of pointed me in the direction of New York when I was accepted into Columbia and said, you know, if this is really what you want to do, then you should go to New York to pursue your career there.
growing up gay in a small town in central Kansas.
Yeah, I mean, certainly I'm sure easier now than when I was 18 there or younger, but my small town high school in Kansas had, you know, I had 25 people in my graduating class, and it was quite difficult. I was lucky to sort of have friends who supported me, and, you know, I certainly wasn't out then, but I think when I was growing up sort of in the 80s, it was a good way out was sort of like pretend you were a punk rocker or something, and, you know, my friends and I sort of did that, and I could sort of vanish into that persona in a way. I go back now and I see kids now who are much more sort of forward and out about their sexuality, and it makes me realize how much things have actually changed in, you know, 15, 20 years. But certainly even, you know, the 80s don't seem that long ago, but it was very difficult.
One of the characters in Mysterious Skin makes the jump back to New York. Is there a relationship there in terms of his experiences?
Yeah, that's based very much on my own experience there. I did go to college in Kansas and got my degree in English at the University of Kansas. And Lawrence is certainly very liberal, and I love Lawrence. That's where I went to school, and the geography is different than the rest of Kansas, and certainly the political climate is different also. But it was kind of like a good stepping stone before I actually moved to New York.
And you came to New York, and Mysterious Skin, a novel, became your master's thesis.
Right. I think when I moved to New York, I was, of course, starting to write fiction, and I got into Columbia, but I was still just working on short stories. I think there was a part of me that was really afraid of the idea of writing a novel. I used to call it the N-word, which I guess means something totally different now. But at the time, you know, just the idea of writing a novel just seemed so horrifying to me. You know, I think Mysterious Skin kind of began as a couple of short stories about characters, and I didn't even think they were related, really, at the time. And at some point, the idea of childhood sexual abuse memories merging with, you know, a kid's memories of what he thought was an alien abduction, that just started germinating, and I realized that it was a much bigger story than just a couple of short stories, and that's when I realized I was working on a novel.
That moment when you realized you could combine those, was that like some kind of weird epiphany, like, oh my God?
Yeah, it really was. I think what it probably took was, by then I'd made some friends with other novelists, and I think really that it did take an established writer who I respected to tell me that there was something much more than just a couple of short stories here. But it was very much an epiphany. In a way, it's kind of a horrifying epiphany filled with dread, because writing a short story, you know, you might devote yourself to it for a week, two weeks, maybe a couple of months. But when you know you've got a novel that you're working on, there's something very scary about it, because you know you have this big project ahead of you. But at the same time, there's nothing more rewarding than when you finish a novel. And I think it's really one of the few, I don't know, art forms where you really have, ultimately you have a lot of control over what you're doing. And, you know, it's not like making a, you know, like maybe a musician making a record where you have producers and engineers and other musicians sort of in on it also. And I think that's what I like about writing a novel. And in some ways, maybe I'm kind of a control freak, because when you write a novel, it's you and really no one else creating what you're creating.
There's an editor there, but you don't necessarily have to take the editor's advice.
Right. I mean, they can always threaten to not publish your book, but an editor usually doesn't come on till a period much later in the process. And certainly most people don't really even show their books to an editor until they've got a first draft written. Especially with a first novel, it's very much, you know, a labor of love. I was showing parts of the book to the people in my MFA program, but, you know, ultimately, you really have no idea if you're going to get an agent and an editor until you're done with the book a lot of times. So Mysterious Skin, you know, I really had no idea that I would publish the book until it was finished, and then I was lucky enough to get an agent right away.
I think they sent you on tour for that, didn't they?
Yeah. The publishing world was actually quite different then than it does now. I think a lot of the bigger publishers used to put a lot more money into a budget for, you know, book tours and that sort of thing. I'm lucky enough still to be with HarperCollins, so I am on a book tour with this book. But nowadays, you know, they put their energy into things like internet advertising and that sort of thing a lot. But there's nothing like going on a book tour and actually going out and reading in different cities and sort of meeting people who've read your work. And it's something very very gratifying about knowing that, you know, you do have an audience out there.
Now, you wrote a screenplay for Mysterious Skin long before anybody approached you, long before it even wound up as a play, right?
Right. I'd say maybe 2 years after the book was published, a company optioned it. It was the company who did this film Swingers, which is the film about the straight guys going to Vegas and, you know, very, very different narrative than Mysterious Skin. But the producers of that film were really taken by the book, and they were really devoted to making a film. And they commissioned me to write the script, so I did. It was kind of the first time I'd done that. I don't know, it worked out really well, and then it actually won a Sundance Fellowship, so I went to Sundance and did the Screenwriters Lab and worked with some really great, you know, like Stuart Stern, who'd written Rebel Without a Cause, and that was a really great experience. But then, as it turned out, a number of years went by, and the option lapsed, and the people who had put up the money for it decided they didn't want to do it after all. So, you know, there was a number of years where nothing happened, and then Greg eventually decided he wanted to do the film, but he wanted to rewrite the script on his own, which was totally fine with me, because I think in the long run, I don't know, I think looking back, I see that if this movie ever was going to get made, it was going to have to be someone like Greg to do it. So I'm really thankful to him.
Was the stage adaptation done afterward then?
The play actually happened before Greg's film. Prince Gomovilas is a playwright who adapted it for the stage. And yeah, the stage version, actually, the way it exists is much, much different than the movie. I don't know. It retains the characters and the basic plot, but it's almost like it cuts the book into pieces and then rearranges the pieces in a very different way and a very different order, which was really fascinating to me. And by that time, it had been a number of years after the book had published, so I wasn't so wedded to the narrative as the writer anymore. So it was really exciting for me to see what he redid.
Well, I understand you, when Greg Araki came on board, you were a little bit scared because of certain cardboard elements of his earlier works.
I wasn't sure what, because I knew that Greg just was such a fierce individual filmmaker, and he'd written his own, you know, written all of his own work before, and he'd never worked with someone else's source material. And I was always such a big admirer of Greg's films in terms of music and color and energy and the look of the films, but I wasn't sure how he would create a film that was so character driven. But then, as I got to know Greg personally, I realized that he knew my book better than I did, because by then it had been a number of years since I'd really even looked at my own book, whereas he had, you know, been reading it so carefully and sort of reinterpreting things with his own script. So I think talking to Greg and getting to know him, I knew that he was the right person for the job. It was so much a labor of love for him and the cast and the crew, and it just really was the perfect match.
But Joseph Gordon-Levitt at that point was pretty much just known for being a kid on television.
Right.
How did he come on board, and when you met him, was it immediately apparent he was really a serious actor?
Yes. Let's see. I had certainly seen him on TV in Third Rock from the Sun, and I think I'd seen two or three of his other films. What was that sort of teen comedy based on the Shakespeare play? I can't even remember the name of that now, but I certainly knew he was a great, serious actor. But he'd gone a number of years where he'd sort of given, I don't know, just sort of given up on acting, and he'd gotten back to Columbia and was getting his degree in French, I think, his master's degree. And then at some point he realized he wanted to go back into acting, but he only wanted to do sort of serious, independent films. I don't know, before they actually filmed the movie, he made it a goal of his to get to know me and sort of rack my brain on my feelings about the book and what I wanted the movie to do. And I think, you know, it slowly started dawning on me that he was really the perfect choice for that role, because, I don't know, he's kind of what they call a method actor. Like, he really sort of becomes the character in a way, and he kind of wanted to live his life as the Neil character for a few weeks before they actually started filming. He taught me a lot about actors and their process. It was an interesting period for me as a writer to sort of get to know a little bit more about filmmaking and actors and Hollywood.
How did his process, his creation process, how do you think that compares with your own in terms of writing?
Greg's or Joseph's?
Either.
Well, I think it did show me, sort of back to what I said about a writer having a lot of creative control, I realized that anyone really involved in making a film has a little bit less creative control than I would personally like. But I do realize that Mysterious Skin and films like it are in some ways the most satisfying because they are so much a labor of love. And I think with, you know, the bigger the budget of a film, the more you have like your studio breathing down your neck and sort of dictating what you do with the film. And I don't think that was really the case at all with Mysterious Skin. We all kind of knew each other, and, you know, like the producer and Greg and the cast and me. For a while, for a number of months, it was almost like we were just like a big, happy family. And then when the film actually was coming out, we, you know, we went to Toronto and Sundance and Tribeca and all these film festivals together and did interviews together and, you know, went to parties and had dinner together. And it was sort of like a class reunion or something. And I know a lot of other authors who have had their books made into films, and none of them have stories that seem as sort of warm and fuzzy as my story was. So I'm really happy about that.
Well, afterward, I mean, I know that, you know, there's an intense period, and then afterward everyone goes their separate ways.
Right.
Do you have contact with Iraqi, Joseph Gordon-Levitt or Brady Corbett?
I do, actually. We're all friends still. I was just in L.A. 2 days ago doing a reading, and Greg came. And 3 days before that, I was in New York reading, and Brady lives in New York now, and he came. And Joseph would have come, except he was in Austin at South by Southwest for his new movie. So, you know, I've stayed in touch with all of them. And even Mary Jane, the producer, I'm in touch with her. And Michelle Trachtenberg and Jeff Lycon, who are, you know, in the film, I've stayed in touch with them. Certainly with Greg and Joseph and Brady, I think those three are people that I've kind of made friends with for life. You know, if I go to New York, I know I will see Brady, and if I come out to L.A., I'll see Greg and Joe. So, you know, I couldn't have asked for a better experience, actually.
And at the point the film came out, you were in the midst of your writer's block.
Right. Right. I think the film actually was one of the big reasons that kicked me. Besides the going home and taking care of my mom and all of the sort of personal things that fueled the novel, the experience of my mom's death and Mysterious Skin, the film, were kind of equal kicks to my pants in a way that got me writing again. So many writers say they don't have an audience in mind when they write, or that they aren't affected by that, but I don't really trust that. I think once you have a book out and you know that there's someone out there reading it, it changes the way you write, and it changes your outlook on life and your career. It certainly did for me. When Mysterious Skin, the film, came out, I started getting a lot of letters and emails again, and I would see these people, say, like if we went to a film festival, I would meet these people who said that the book was really important to them. And there had been a number of years where I hadn't really had that so much, or I'd lost touch with that. Getting back in touch with that feeling and knowing that there were people who seemed to really be excited about me writing another book or waiting for a new book made me want to actually start working again.
Is it scary, though, when a book like We Disappear is out there and you have no idea what your quote, fans are going to think of it?
It is scary, and I think I say that because I experienced to an extent what it was like to have a book out that people didn't like as much. That said, you know, sometimes I meet people, on this book tour, I meet people who are really, like, passionate about my second book in awe, but I think in general, most people read the first book and didn't read the second, or, you know, sometimes I meet people and they don't even know that I had a second book out. But having that kind of experience of, I don't know, I don't want to say failure, but there was a certain kind of disappointment, or certainly on my part, like it was disappointing just to have a book out that didn't do as well. And having that kind of let down in a way, I don't know, kind of toughened me a little bit as a writer.
There's a story called Deep Green, Pale Purple, and that's material cut from We Disappear?
It is. Very perceptive. Most people don't know that. I'm really proud of that story. That actually was an early chapter in the original version of We Disappear. The book was originally about a family who accidentally kill a young girl, and instead of sort of coming forward with her accidental death, they wind up burying her body in their orchard on their farm. And then because of this disappeared girl that they accidentally killed, the mother character becomes really interested in other disappeared children. So the mother in the early version of the book did resemble very much the mother, how she exists now.
What is shoegaze music, and what relationship does that have to your work?
It's funny. Sort of my favorite period of music is this, a lot of these bands that were coming out in the early 80s in the UK, and that's sort of the term that a lot of journalists use to describe them. The thing that sort of links them is this kind of heavily atmospheric, kind of fuzzy guitar sound. It's almost like if you, like, took a really beautiful, blurry picture and translated that somehow to sound. A lot of the bands use singers, but the lyrics are sort of unintelligible. It's almost sort of like the voice becomes another instrument or something. But it's very much like, I've heard it described as like the experience of being on drugs without like the actual like bad effects of being on drugs. And there's something about that music that always inspired me in a way, or it's certainly the sort of music that I would listen to a lot when I wrote. I don't know, over time, well, for instance, I realized that it was one thing that linked me and Greg Araki, because it was his sort of favorite music also, and it's the kind of music that he uses a lot in his films and certainly used to full extent in the Mysterious Skin film. I feel more inspired by music, really, than any other sort of art form, and I think I'm one of the few writers that actually listens to music when I write, because it tends to affect the way I see a scene or the sort of emotion that I want to put behind a scene or something.
Do you still play drums?
I would say yes and no. I don't actually physically play a drum set because I don't own one anymore, but I think when you play drums in a band and you're serious about it, it's kind of like riding a bike. It's something that's just like, it becomes part of your physical makeup or something. You're always, when you hear a song, you're always focusing on the rhythm of the song, and, you know, you might be actually playing like invisible drums with your fingers, or you're tapping your foot or something. And even the strangest things, like a lot of drummers I know have problems with like teeth grinding because they actually like grind their teeth to the beat of the music, and that's some things like that I've done all my life.
That would be kind of a problem if you were also doing crystal meth.
Very much, very much. I will say, though, that there's something about being a drummer that I think sort of has affected me as a writer. It's hard to explain, but I think when you can pattern out and sort of mathematically plan out the rhythms of a song or music, it kind of affects the way you work the pacing of your writing, or, you know, the sort of rises and falls and ups and downs and rhythm of your actual writing also.
Do you think that working on the film Mysterious Skin or your work at Sundance affects the pacing of a book like We Disappear?
I think so. And I don't know if I would say that it did, if I did that consciously or completely directly, but certainly when you write a script, you have to pare everything down and cut out all the fat of your novel. You focus so much on the way an audience is seeing the rises and falls of action and excitement and emotion. So I'm sure that in some way, directly or indirectly, that has affected the things that I've written since writing the script.
Scott Heim, now this book has come out. First of all, it's in trade paper rather than hardback, which is kind of odd, I think.
Yeah, I thought it was a little odd at first, and then in retrospect now, I'm really happy that they did it that way. I think we're at a point now in publishing, maybe about a year ago the tide started turning, and I think in the next few years you'll see less and less hardcover. Certainly, you know, just speaking for myself, I would much rather, I love the feeling of having a book in hardcover, and I like carrying a hardcover, but at the same time, I would much rather spend $13 on a trade paperback, you know, a paperback original than $25 or sometimes even more for a hardcover. When my publisher bought the book, you know, eventually I think my editor came to me and said, you know, they'd sort of done some kind of marketing research kind of thing and realized that because of the Mysterious Skin film, I kind of had a bigger audience of, you know, college kids, even like, you know, high school age kids that had sort of come to the book because of the movie. And, you know, certainly when I was in high school and reading books, I didn't have, you know, $25 to spend on a hardcover. So, you know, they certainly did a really big first printing of the trade paperback that I know they wouldn't have done if it were hardcover. So I think it'll, you know, hopefully have a good shelf life in trade paper. We'll see.
Now you're working on both a screenplay and a novel?
Yeah. I'm one of those people who can't really work heavily on something until a book actually comes out. So often there's this year-long period between when you turn in your final version and when the book actually comes out. You know, it can be anywhere from like six months to a year and a half. And a lot of writers jump right into something else. I've never really been able to do that until the book actually comes out. I will say that it took me a long time to realize that a lot of times the work of a book isn't just the sitting down and writing, but it's the actual thinking about it. So I've been thinking a lot about my new book, and I guess that in itself is work. So if I think of it that way, I don't feel so guilty.
And what about a screenplay?
You know, I've always been a huge horror film fan, and I don't really mean so much like the kind of, you know, slasher, torture, mindless thrills of some horror films, but I really like the idea of writing an intelligent horror film that scares the audience but also kind of makes them think. And I've had this blossoming idea for a number of years that I've been kind of just playing with. And now that I have some time where I don't really know what I'm doing next, I think I might get started on that.
You've been listening to an interview with Scott Heim, whose latest novel is We Disappear, Mysterious Skin, is available as a DVD. And you can read Scott's blog at scottheim.com.
Correct.
I'm Richard Walensky on Cover to Cover.